Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast, Alan Heary. Great to see you.
I am so happy to be here. Honestly, Dan, it's great. I can't believe you have me on. It's great.
Well, Alan's extremely humble, by the way. You'll hear as we go through the interview. But he shouldn't be, because he's a bloody legend in my head, at least. I've known
Alan.
A legend. He's a legend in my head. Alan and I have known each other for a number of years through a mutual friend, Colin. And in fact, Colin, I'm hoping to rope into the podcast because Colin came up with the name of this podcast. I don't know if you know that.
Yes, I heard that. All right. He is brilliant at putting together content. Anytime I send over stuff to Colin and go, looking for a bit of copy on this, Colin, I've been working out for 3 hours or 4 hours and I can't seem to get it right in my head. What do you think? Boom, 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 boom. There. Oh, thanks very much. Just genius at it.
So, in fact, before we get him on the podcast, Colin Lewis is his name. He writes a column for Marketing Week every week. Incredibly talented digital marketer, e-commerce guy. I mean, super smart. But on packaging, naming, copywriting, he's a genius. Hence why I've got a great name podcast, Honey, I Blew Up the Business. But Alan and I have met through Colin. Colin and Alan are based in Dublin. And Alan is one of the world's top mental fitness trainers. I'm going to call you that. He's very humble. He won't say that.
I'm going to write that down now, Dan. Dan said, Alan is one of the
quotes.
Definitely going to use that.
And one of the reasons I wanted to ask Alan on is he's an entrepreneur in his own right. He's a very entrepreneurial guy. But more than that, he's got this particular skill set, which I've been, in every conversation I've been having on this podcast, I've been seeing a common thread. And the common thread is keeping going. Resilience, actually kind of getting your head down and grinding it out when things are going tough as an entrepreneur. And I thought, this is such an interesting topic because for me personally, for two reasons. One is because I think it's going to be of interest to you, my dear listener, that this will be great takeaway content for you to apply to your life today. But my second reason for getting him on is I have got a slightly selfish interest, which I've not really spoken about on the podcast very much, but I've signed up to do a ridiculous ultra event in 2022 called the Marathon des Sables. And the Marathon des Sables is Marathon of Sand in French, but it's the equivalent of 6 marathons in 7 days, ... in the Sahara Desert, which is the fun bit. And I've signed up to it very naively, and I've never, ever done anything like that before. So I'm hoping today Alan can tell me how the hell I'm not going to die.
Well, it's an amazing event, and I think there's only been a few deaths on it. And if you do die, it's going to be really good for your podcast. It'll just take off.
that's the way to look at it. And straight away, we're in with a positive mindset. There we go. Right. Before we get any further into my imminent doom, a quick biog of Alan. I've mentioned how great he is at his job, but he's worked with boxing champs, Olympians, professional sports people of all stripes, so cyclists, golfers, football teams. But he also works with business people, worked with brands like Microsoft, and he's a real believer in the transferable skills of mental toughness between sport and business. He's a trained clinical hypnotherapist, trained in sports science and health, and it's taken him all over the world, particularly he spent a lot of time in Australia. And a couple of things he's done, which I'm going to get into, but in 2008, he made a documentary where he got a team of amateur cyclists to complete the Race Across America. And can you just describe what Race Across America is for those that don't know?
Okay, so Race Across America is a 3,000-mile bike race, or 5,000 kilometers. It goes all the way from Oceanside, one side of the country in America, all the way up to Annapolis. So you're going through everything from deserts up over the mountains of Colorado, and you know, you're going through places like Kansas and the Appalachians then to finish. And it's an amazing event, but what makes it a little bit unique is, unlike other bike races or bike events where you've stages, so for example, you look at the Tour de France or the Giro or any of those, they do set amount of distance per day. But Race Across America, once the clock starts on one side of the country, it doesn't stop till you get to the other side. So you're literally going 24 hours a day. So solo riders will spend up to 22 hours a day on their bike in order to finish it inside the cutoff time. And what we did was we put together a team to go relay 24 hours a day. So we ended up doing it in six days of 4 hours in 2008.
So constantly cycling, more or less, for 6 days, nearly a week. That's so. And not only was he doing that, he thought, I know, this is a good idea, because this is so ridiculous sounding, I'm going to do this in Ireland. So he brought this concept round to Ireland. So he now owns and operates one of the world's toughest endurance events. Can you tell us about the race around Ireland?
Yeah, we had done the Race Across America in 2008, and I came back and I thought, oh, you know what? I mean, we have an amazing country. It'll be really nice to show it off. Why don't we set this thing up? And where, again, it's 2,200 kilometers, 1,350 miles, nonstop around the country. So the moment you start off in Trim, you're basically given a route book. You've got your crew with you, and you start cycling. And again, if you look at the guy who holds the record set in Ireland, he did the entire distance in less than 4 days. So for the whole duration of the event, he had 3 20-minute sleeps and a 40-minute sleep. The rest of the time, he was basically riding his bike at high speed. It's just so when you talk about mental toughness, and it's incredible what people can do. So when you watch people, I mean, I've done Race Across America as well as a crew chief with a solo rider, who, again, my job was basically to keep him on the bike 22 hours a day. And part of that, you know, you go down to the lowest common denominator of you're never going to make it. Like, we're not going to get inside the cutoff. There's no chance of you doing it. So using every psychological trick in the book, but also then, you know, with planning and stuff. But yeah, it's amazing that when you see him and he's zigzagging over the road a little bit, and he looks exhausted, he's begging you for 3 hours sleep, and you're getting out and you're going, I can give you 10 minutes, but you got to ride for the next hour first, man. And he gets annoyed and angry with you, and he rides up the road, and then he comes back 10 minutes later and goes, no, I'm fine now, I'm fine, let's just keep going. You go, oh, okay. So it's incredible what you can actually do. And we might give him 15 minutes sleep, and he will wake up and he will ride his bike for another 8 hours solid, you know, through mad conditions. So yeah.
So what? And this is why I wanted Alan on the podcast, because, you know, when we're in an entrepreneurial role and you're it is an ultra endurance event in and of itself. It keeps going and going and going. And what I wanted to do was sort of dig into some of these tactics and understand what you can do and what you shouldn't do and all that kind of stuff to help. Because I think there is some really interesting topics.
I do think, though, you know, we look at ultra distance events a lot, and we try to say, well, this is an ultra distance, this is how it applies to being an entrepreneur, which is great. And there are many crossovers. But one of the things that makes ultra distance events easier than being an entrepreneur is there is a finish line when it comes to ultra events. So you do the Martin del Sable, you get up each day, you know you have to cover a certain distance, you know, over a certain time, you make it, you don't make it, that's, you know, how it will go. But at least there's a finish line there. So there's a reason to get up every day and keep going. Whereas as an entrepreneur, sometimes we don't know or we don't see what exactly the finish line is. And so people come to me all the time and they say, well, if you take that solo rider or even the team that we put in, and say, well, how often do you mention the finish line to them? Like, are you always motivated by the finish line? Do we talk to them every day and go, you know, it's going to be great when you get there, your friends, family, oh my God, you're going to be a hero, man, this is going to be super. To be honest with you, I don't think I mentioned the finish line twice to the guy all the way across the race at that time. But the process is hugely important. So what he was doing every single day, you know, the habits of what you drink, what you eat, you know, the step in front of you, or for him was the pedal. Just keep the pedal strokes going. Push, pull, going up that hill. That's all you're going to do. And a lot of the time when we were looking at goals, we weren't looking at goals for finish lines. We were looking at goals. Can you just get to that next signpost? Can you just get to the gate up the road there? And I think that's one thing that we have to learn. But another part of it then, this is really something for you to think about in how you set out to do your big challenge, is a lot of people are talk about how they set challenges like a mountain to climb. And I think that's a great analogy, that you want to climb up to the top of a mountain. Well, first of all, you have to realize or understand that you're actually at the right mountain. So your reason to climb the mountain has to be very, very strong. So if you're standing at the bottom of a mountain and you're going, oh, I'm going to do this because it'll be a bit of crack. Sure, it'll be a bit of fun. Shall we see how we get on? there's a good chance you're probably not going to make it. All right, so we have to understand why we want to do it. But if you come to me and you say, I really want to do this all, and that becomes your goal. So when I look at goals, people talk about SMART goals, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, time-bound, and pretty much useless. I look at goals in a slightly different way. What, why not, and how? So what are you going to do? What do you want to do? Why is really important. But then after that, then it's the challenges. You know, what's going to get in the way? And so people think it's all about positive thinking. Oh, if you're positive, it'll be great. Positive, my ass. Positive doesn't get you across the country. You got to look at, you know, what could possibly go wrong. If you're going into being an entrepreneur and you think, oh, sure, if I just wake up every day and I'm positive and I get out there and I drive and I drive, that's not what it's about. So we need to know what challenges are. And that's why the mountain analogy is good, because if from a mountain climbing perspective, let's say somebody climbs the top of a mountain, takes 4 hours. They've never done it before. They get there, 4 hours. If they come back down the mountain and you sit down with them, you say, right, I want to climb the same mountain. If you're of the same fitness level, is it going to take you longer to do? Less time, same amount of time? Well, it's going to take you a shorter amount of time. Why? Because they'll say to you, oh man, I came to this boulder. I had no idea how to get around it. But actually, if you go this way, or I came to this fork in the road, I went right. I should have gone left. I had to come back. You go left. It will take you a quicker amount of time. That's why your podcast is so important. That's why listening to what other entrepreneurs have done, how they have overcome certain challenges, how they got to where they're at, that's really important. So for me, the first step is always, who's done it? I want to find out who's done it before. So in 2008, when we decided to do Race Across America, I brought somebody in who had the Irish record at the time, had put a four-person team together, sat him down and interrogated him literally all day. You know, what would you do differently? You know, how did you find this? What would the team like? What type of crew did you have? If you were going to change anything about the crew, what would you change? And what you find is a lot of people are actually open to it, which you're finding on your podcast. I mean, to sit back and listen to the stories that some people are able to tell you about what they've done and how they accomplished it, it's fantastic. So for me, that's where the mountain analogy really comes into play. What do you want to do? Why do you want to do it? What's going to get in the way? What are those challenges? And what steps or actions are you going to take to overcome those actions along the way? Because they will pop up.
Yeah, that's really great. And actually, and it's interesting, the whole thing about which mountain you're going to climb. Because I think a lot of people, and I've done this, you start climbing the nearest mountain and thinking you're making progress, and you get to the top of it, and it's the wrong mountain. So, you know.
Yeah, or the other thing that happens as well, you know, you get people who say, drive, 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 keep pushing, 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 pushing. And you get to the top of the mountain, and you get there, and you suddenly go, is that it? What now? And this happens as an entrepreneur as well. Like, you know, there are a lot of people who become really successful and they're sitting at the top and they're still not happy. And it's because they weren't happy at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the time, if we take the mountain analogy, I say to people, you need to, as you're striving towards the top, take time out now and again to sit down, to look around and go, wow, haven't I done well? Isn't the view amazing from here? If the view is this good from here, what is it going to be like from the top? Mm-hmm. But you do need to take those rest periods. And I think that's something, you know, we talked about 3 days. So, you know, if you look at, you know, I know you're part of Strategic Coach and, you know, you interviewed Dan.
Yes, yeah.
I'm here as well about Strategic Coach. Or you're talking about Strategic Coach, but talking about these 3 days. I mean, you've seen 50 entrepreneurs sitting in a room, as I have. And all of a sudden then they mentioned this concept of taking 3 days, days off. And people freak out. Oh my God. So I don't see those as 3 days. They're recovery days. And I think that's where it's really important to understand how people in sport, you know, are become successful as well. It's not about the training. It's about the recovery in between. Training is designed to put you into a state of bringing you outside of your comfort zone. So in a training session, the training session will be hard enough to break down the muscle fiber. And when you give it enough recovery, it rebuilds. But a muscle is very clever, because what a muscle says is, well, yesterday I broke down doing this weight and this amount of repetitions. That's not going to happen to me again. I'm going to build back stronger than I was. And so what do? You go into the gym a couple of days later and you break it down again and it rebuilds back stronger. That's why performance increases. However, if you take somebody who goes into a gym and they train and they break down the muscle, but before it has a chance to recover, what do? They pile on more training. And so they break down the muscle, and before it recovers, they break it down. So performance starts to go down. And sometimes I'll get an athlete who'll come in and sit down with me and go, do you know what? I'm I'm doing more training than I've ever done, and it's not working. My performances are dropping, and that's the problem. So you need that recovery built in. But this happens with entrepreneurs all the time, because they go from project to project to project to project. So they'll take on something, and you put all your work and effort into it, and mentally you work really hard, and you break yourself down, if you like. You put yourself into that discomfort zone, which is great, because this is where you get stronger. But you only get stronger in those recovery times. You only get stronger by taking a moment to step back and go, okay.
I think the idea of recovery days for entrepreneurs is really a very good one, and I'm going to take that away. Funnily enough, just personally, I've had a thing this year where I've one of my key priorities is I'm calling it proactive recuperation. Mm. So I'm booking in holidays in advance in the calendar and then sticking to it, and I'm really being quite strict on when I'm working, just during the day and during the week. But so this is all great, and I think there's a whole bunch of really good stuff in here, but I want to kind of just zoom back. I'm personally intrigued to know how the hell you got these people across America. You know, so you just explain, you had a whole bunch of normal people, not elite athletes, not elite cyclists, and you got them to race across America in less than a week.
So
how do you do that?
All right, so start to finish, very simply. I'd been doing some work in Australia, and the Australian Institute of Sport. And one of the things they're very, very good at doing is building teams around teams, or teams around individuals. So on a Monday morning, we would sit down, and they would say, okay, you know, there would be a group of us sitting around, and they would say, right, the cyclist is coming in on Thursday. Physiologist, what are you going to do? And the physiologist would say, we're going to bring him into the lab. We're going to test him on VO2 max. We're going to do lactate threshold. Psychologist, what are you going to do? We're going to work on his goals. Biomech guy, we're going to bring him in. We're going to put him on the bike, and we're going to look at the aerodynamics. And so each member of the team around them would work on this individual to make them as good as they could possibly be. And then I had watched a documentary while I was there about a race, this mad race called Race Across America, toughest bike race in the world. And I thought, wow, if I take four leisure cyclists and I train them professionally, build a team around them like what we would normally have for top athletes, where could we get to? So when I came back to Ireland, this is one of those things where it just happens as well. So I came back to Ireland, had kind of forgotten about it a little bit. And I used to do some work on a local TV station, Mr. Motivator type jobby, or Mr. Aggravator, some people might call me. But so I used to do this thing on the local TV. And I just happened to meet up with a guy for coffee who is a producer on this local TV station. And he said, have you got any ideas for a fitness show? And I said, well, actually, I've been working on this thing, you know, Race Across America, blah, blah. And he said, oh, that sounds like a really cool idea. We could make a documentary on that. And I said, yeah, great. And so I kind of left it, but didn't think really much more about it until a couple of days later. I met somebody on the street as I was walking down, and I said, oh, I met Kevin from the thing. And he said, you guys are making a documentary. You're doing RAM next year. That's going to be fantastic. I was talking to Johnny about it. And he said, and suddenly it went from this idea in my head to people talking about it. Now I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I actually have to make this thing happen now. And sometimes we need that. Sometimes we need to kind of verbalize with others and have that. So then the plan was take four leisure cyclists. So what we did was we took, we had about 40 people apply, got them down to 13, actually got them down to 12 people. And the idea was that we would do three training camps, and then we would drop some people at each training camp, and we got down to the four, not necessarily the four strongest riders, but the four riders who, say, put in the most effort, you know, again, habits, process, and we're able to do that. And I built a strong team around them. Like, we put in place the physiologists, you know, from DCU, Dublin City University, had them tested out there. We brought in top managers and coaches that worked with the Olympic squads. I did all the mental fitness coaching with them that I would normally be doing, again, with the Olympic guys and the world champions and stuff. And so we built this team around them. But here's what happens. When you build a team around four guys like that, they start to believe in the project. They start to go, yeah, okay, we're really doing this. And so even the coach that I had brought on, who had worked with a lot of Olympic cyclists, came to me and said, how are you getting these guys out at 5 a.m. to ride for 3 hours before they go to work? Because they're working full days. Yeah, because you told them to. Yeah, but I don't understand why. It's because we changed the identity. The outcome, yes, we had looked at, could we do Race Across America? We set three goals, finish Race Across America, break the Irish record, which at the time was 7.5 days, and look to see if we could get a podium place, which was a big ask if you think about it. And so, yeah, we took the four leisure cyclists, trained them for 6 months solid with this team around them, got them to race across America, built the identity of the team. So we're actually there, although when we got there, we were obviously having a bit of fun, but we looked at everything. I mean, even down to when you're riding bikes, coming into, say, traffic lights, if the lights are red, you got to slow down earlier coming in, so you're never actually stopped. So by the time it goes green, you ride through, because you pick up penalty points if you don't stop at lights or stop signs and all that. And so even that, and if you watch the documentary, in the last couple of minutes of the documentary, you'll see us coming into Annapolis, and our guys are really calm in the car, and they're saying, okay, that's it, you're doing well, just keep pushing now, right, drive on to the next one. So you're talking to the rider, and there's a Canadian team, and they're chasing us down, and they're screaming at their guy, you gotta move, and they're screaming at these guys, screaming, and they get stuck at a traffic light. One that we would have probably either got through, because for us, if the light's green, you got to sprint, you got to make sure you get your ass through that thing, all right? Or if it's red, you're slowing down, so you never actually stopped at any point. We ended up finishing second in the events in total, 30 seconds ahead of that team that was stopped at that traffic light. So this is how close it can be after 3,000 miles. So for me, it's about the process. It's looking at the small things that can actually make huge differences, you know, what we've heard before in terms of these, the one percentages, you know, just changing the one percentages.
That incremental gains, marginal gains, isn't it? The guy from...
marginal gains, Brailsford. Yeah. But it is, it's really about that. But I think we need to bring that a lot more sometimes into our own world in terms of being entrepreneurs, you know, looking at the marginal gains from a recovery as well as the work you're doing.
Can you just on that point of marginal gains, before I say this, the documentary, I believe, is on YouTube.
It is, yeah. It's up on YouTube now. It's called 14 States of Pain.
14 States of Pain. Sounds like a great fun trip, week holiday.
yeah. You'll also see that I was trying to get on the team, by the way, and really? I don't make it.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't make it. And so I got to a point where you end up putting yourself off the team. That's a whole other story.
That's really interesting. So just to explain, if people don't know who Brailsford is and Team Sky and Marginal Gains, what is that concept?
Okay, so the idea for Brailsford, I believe he took it from Formula One. So the idea is you look at performance and you break it down into all the smallest little things. So if you take a bike, so let's take what Brailsford would have done. Let's take the bike. What's the difference between having a saddle slightly sloped down or slightly sloped up? What's the difference in aerodynamics from position? If we look at jerseys, most of us would go out on the bike and we just ride out with a jersey. Any old jersey will do. But if you're looking at going through air much, much faster, then you're looking at changing the texture of the jersey that you ride, so you make it more dimpled. This is why a golf ball in golf, there's a rule to how many dimples are allowed on a golf ball, because the more dimples, the faster it goes through the air. Now, if you can design shirts with all of these dimples on it. So what they did was create this, what they call the squirrel room, where they go in down and they would test out all of these things from an aerodynamics point of view, from a weight perspective, from a change in body position. I mean, they would take it to a point where they would even bring different mattresses to the events like Tour de France, so the riders would be able to sleep on their own mattresses. I mean, you and I might bring our own pillow, but these guys would bring it. But all of these small things, although they sound a little bit over the top, it's not if you want to win. And that's really what this is about. Is for me, it's all about how do I get the best performance I can possibly get. I'm still not a great cyclist by any stretch of the imagination, but I do everything in my power to give myself the best opportunity to be a better cyclist. That's what you're looking at. And so it's going to be the same for you. I mean, sitting down and going through what are all the small, easy things that you can do to get you through. So with Race Across America again, so we're talking about marginal gains and how we do that. Race Across America, I went back a few years later, but I actually wanted to compete. So we put together an 8-person team. Now, with a team of, say, 4 or 8, you might have a crew of people. Now, the crew they drive, navigate, physio. So the first year that we had, 2008, you'll see that we brought a chef on board. We had a full team around us. I wanted to see what would happen if we could take 8 riders and no crew, which meant that if you weren't riding the bike, you were driving or you were navigating or you were trying to get a little bit of recovery. And so we were the first team in the 34-year history of the event. They didn't really want us to do it unsupported because it is a little dangerous. But for that, we had to go down to what could possibly go wrong here. What are the small things that we can do on a daily basis to make sure that it works? And so for me, the idea is you do 30 minutes on the bike, flat out. And then after your 30 minutes flat out on the bike, you get into the car and the next rider does 30 minutes flat out. And then he gets in the car, then you get back out and you do 30 minutes. So you're relaying like this. But every time I got into the car, I had a list in front of me. So I've got this sheet of paper in front of me and it says, drink water, put your hands in ice, put the towel around your neck, eat some food. Okay. And the other guys were slagging me off going, you're just a sports scientist. You should know this stuff. But the problem is that when anxiety goes up, we forget to do the simple stuff. And so people try to complicate the hell out of things. Don't complicate things. All sports is very simple. Boxing is very simple. See the target, hit the target, stay protected at all times. That's simple. Our job as sports scientists is to complicate the crap out of it. Our job is to take and break it down into its smallest components and say, if we tweak this or we change this, how can we make the performance better? The boxer's job is to go in and just see the target, hit the target, and stay protected at all times. That's their job. So when it came to the cyclist riding Race Across America, that solo rider, he would come and say, well, what about the GPS? What about this? What about your job, ride bike, our job, everything else? So we would take full responsibility. And knowing your role is really important.
I think that's there's some stuff in there about that simplicity of focus and checklists and keeping disciplined on the basics. I think it's really, really good advice there. It's in some ways, see the target, hit the target, stay protected is a good advice for an entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. And even creating the list, usually what you'll find is that if an entrepreneur is getting under pressure, feeling the pressure a lot more, you will find that they're forgetting to do the basics. My job as a performance coach, so I work obviously performance coach with sport and in business. My job as a performance coach is to remind them to do the simple stuff. I always say this to people, okay, you know, our job together, you'll be listening to me and you go, that's common sense. It is, but it's not common practice. Mm. And so this is why I think coaching is so important. Having somebody that it reminds you to do the simple stuff, how to keep on track. Are you doing this? And that's why the lists are so important. Yeah. I firmly believe that when people lose focus, they lose it because they're forgetting to do simple things.
It's interesting because I've been a big believer in checklists for years. I run a technology company and I can't tell you the amount of times where you get everything right apart from someone's forgotten to put the Google Analytics tracker on the website. And then 6 months later, there's no... it's that kind of real basic stuff that you get all the complicated things right, but the little things go. And I think so that when you're under pressure, when you're tired, when things are going on, that really helps. And I've got to say, there's other bit here of like when you're actually in the race, as it were. I mean, I've had this with some of the longer runs I've been doing. Your brain scrambles at a certain point. And so you can't hold information like distance and time and all this kind of stuff. And I think there's a parallel there with like, you know, when you're under the cosh and under pressure and you're stressed in a business.
Yeah. And so this is why, again, going back to those rest recovery days are really, really important to stop you from doing that. Look, I have this saying that I use all the time. I don't remember. It's a quote from somewhere and somebody I'm sure will put in and go, it's from X. But it's the more tired I get, the more stupid other people become. And I live by that. So the more tired I become, the more stupid other people become. And you certainly find out when you're doing ultra distance. Like on all 4 times I've been to Race Across America, whether it's crewing or riding, I've had instances where I've gone, oh man, I really need to take a good look at myself. You know, you threaten to throw the physio through the window if he doesn't tell you exactly where you are on the road. You find yourself stabbing somebody in the chest with your finger going, you need to do this now. And you suddenly take a breath. I mean, one of the things that we did the last time was to have the song Let It Go in your head all the time, because when we did this, we set it up that anytime something bad happened, or somebody did something that we made a mistake because of tiredness, we had the song playing Let It Go. And it was a way for us to say, well, we have a choice here. So this is the point that I made to the guys. We've got a choice here, guys. We'll be laughing about this in 6 weeks' time, or we can laugh about it now. And we can refocus on what's required, what we need to do right now to overcome it. So the more tired we become. So if you find that other people are becoming really stupid around you, or, you know, starting to become idiots, you really need to take a good look at yourself and go, am I taking in enough water? Did I get enough sleep in the last few nights? What's my energy like? And that's your key point, is to go back to that and manage that and then create the list. But sorry, just on the list thing. Mm. Brilliant book, which I'm sure you've read, is Black Box Thinking. And I don't know if you've read it. But anyway, Black Box Thinking. And so they talk about, why is the airline industry one of the safest in the world? Well, it's very simple. It's because every time they make a mistake and a plane goes down and it crashes, there's a black box and there's a bunch of people sitting around the table and going, what went wrong? How did this happen? Mm. How can we change this? How can we make sure it never happens again? And so those checklists then, so when pilots sit down with a checklist on their lap and they say, check such a thing, move this, press this button, they do this because over the years they've learned that checklists work.
Mm.
And so that's what we do. You know, I'm doing an ultra event in a couple of weeks' time with a buddy of mine. We're doing a two-person team. And although we're going to have the fun and we're just going to have a little bit of cracks on the west side of the country, so the weather's going to be horrible and the mountains are going to be hard, and we are going to have a bit of fun with it, I would still have my checklist. I'll still have my list of things that we need to have in place before we go. We will have procedures in place for the day. We'll have the process in place. We'll sit down with what do we want to accomplish, why, the why nots. They become really important, your challenges. What could possibly go wrong? Like when we've done Race Across America, and I sit down with the guys and go, what happens if one of us gets sick? What happens if one of us gets injured? What happens if somebody dies? And the lads are going, geez, would you relax? And I go, well, no, I mean, these things have happened. You know, people have been killed on these events before. So
it's just funny. There's a really great TED talk. Tim Ferriss gives a TED talk. He talks about Stoic philosophy and how it's helped him with his mental health. And he talks about a concept he calls fear setting, which is sort of, what's the worst case scenario? And if that happens, what are you going to do? And then, and is a framework he uses. So I'd really recommend checking it out, because I've used that when I was going through my kind of 2017 blow up regularly. I'd seen that video. I was doing literally writing down what's the worst thing that's going to happen. How can I stop that?
Yeah.
And what happened? You know, what am I going to, how will I recover from it if it did happen?
That's right. I do this. I've sat down with world champions, right? I've had a world boxing champion come in, sit down with me. Never met the guy before. And he said, you know, I've got this huge fight coming up in 6 weeks. I'm away in a training camp with him now. This is our first meeting together. And I sit down and I said to him, so what happens if you lose? And he goes, what? What happens if you lose? And he goes, well, I can't think of losing. Well, you might lose. You're fighting one of the best fighters in the world. Could happen. And he goes, well, I can't think about that. But you're going to think about that. Mm-hmm. Because here's the deal. Everybody has doubts. Anyone who tells you they don't have doubts, they're either lying or they're delusional, one or the other, right? So we all have doubts. So if we can put that down, so we've that fear of, you know, what happens if I lose? And he goes, well, if I lose, well, if I get back to training and, you know, I get to fight the guy again and probably make more money on the next one. And so we go through this process and we say, right, so we have those in place. If this happens, we go here, then we can park that. We don't need to look at that right now. Now we're going to focus on absolutely everything we can do to give you the best chance of winning, not to win, because we can't control that, but I can certainly control your performance. We can get you into the ring feeling the best you've ever felt in your life before. That will give us the best chance of you winning. And so that's where I come up with the, you know, I talk about the what if, you know, was people, whenever somebody gets anxious about something, you know, I could lose my house. Okay, what if you lose the house? Well, I'll end up homeless. Will you though? Oh, well, I lose the house. Okay, I'll have to move in with my brother. What if you move in with your brother? Well, I'll be there for a year. Okay, what if you move in there for a year? What happens then? Well, I'll make enough money to get back on my feet. Okay, what if you make enough money to get back on your feet? Well, then I'm going to be fine. Okay, so it's just what if? Let's actually chase it down. So there's no harm looking at challenges. I will give you this little story though. We're a football team in the west of the country. It's a county team we have in GAA over here in Ireland. It's basically like football. It's called football, obviously. It's like soccer, but you can actually handle the ball, right? So GAA.
You know, right?
Yeah. And so this county team brought me in, and the manager stood up at the front, and it's the start of the season, and he says, okay, everybody, just so you know, it's all about positivity, lads. If you're not positive, you'll win nothing. You need to be positive. It's all about positivity. And he said, we have Alan here, and Alan's our motivational guy for the year. He's going to tell you now all about positivity. And he introduces me, and I stand up, and I went, two things. Number one, I am not your motivational guy for the year. Right. I am a strategist. I am a performance coach. We look to see what performance. So we're not looking to motivate you. We're looking at performance. Number two, you can be as positive as you like all day, lads, and you still win nothing. Because it's not about positive thinking. It's about positive action. And those actions only come from knowing where the negativity is, as in what could possibly go wrong as well as what could possibly go well. And here's another point just on that. A lot of times when I work with teams, I start asking a very simple question. How many people here would like to win the championship? Or if you're working with business people, how many people here would like to be successful? And everybody puts their hand up. And I go, that's fantastic. Now, how many people want to be? Because understanding the difference between those two questions can be the difference between success and failure sometimes. You know, we'd all like to lose a little bit of weight. There are other people out there who would like to do the Martin Lasalle, right? There are other people who would like to do that. But how much do you want to do it? And that's the difference. It's not until we move from I'd like to be successful to I want to be that we're willing to make the sacrifices in order to make it happen.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think this level of commitment, you know, the sort of, okay, what's the price of you completing that thing, be that a race or a business strategy or what have you. That's amazing. I think what's interesting here, you get this various, it's like the story you're telling yourself, or that you kind of, you're mapping out a kind of story here in people's minds. Okay, it could go wrong, could go right. We're going to be pragmatic about that, real about that. And what I'm interested to find out from you or to ask you about is you have this training in hypnotherapy, and you talked about working with elite athletes, and you talked about working with, you know, top boxers, but how do you kind of coach them or get them? What do you say into their ears as they're going into the ring?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I always like to put this across to people. Imagine what it's like to be in the 9X Arena, 15,000 people screaming the place down at a world title fight. The place is going nuts and the atmosphere is electric. But now imagine what it's like if you're not actually in the crowd, if you're standing in the dressing room in front of the world champion, and you've 3 minutes to prepare them just before they walk through the door. What are you going to say or do at that moment? That's actually what I do. That's my job. My job is to make sure that by the time they get to this moment, that they feel confident and focused. But that is absolutely no different to a salesperson or to an entrepreneur who's going into an investor. You're going in to talk about your thing or to do a presentation at a meeting or to walk into the bank and sit down with the bank and say, we need money. There's no difference in what they're going to face to what an entrepreneur is going to face. Because what they're all going to face, what everybody will face in that moment is this fight or flight. So your body's going to react in certain ways. Heart rate will increase. Breathing rate becomes rapid. Muscles will start to tense up. Eyes will dilate. All of these things the body is doing for you because it's trying to help you. And you will either fight, flight, or you freeze, which in sport we call it choking. So when somebody says they choked on that penalty, what they really mean was they stopped breathing at that moment. They actually physically choked.
Not a bit of that. So, we're recording this the week that England didn't win the European Cup final. So we had a bit of that where we missed some penalties.
Yeah, but penalties are really, really difficult for players because you go from being a team player to suddenly being a solo player. And that's actually quite hard to do. So it's hard to switch. That's a whole other conversation. So what are you doing in 3 minutes? So what I've done is I've developed this 3 minute exercise. And so there's three parts to dealing with looking at outcomes or situations that you're in, stressful situations, right? So there's three things going on. The first is the body, what the body is actually doing at that moment. And for a lot of us, it's going nuts, all right? Heart rate's increasing, breathing rate's becoming rapid. The second part is the visual, what we actually see. This is where you mentioned the hypnosis. For me, I chase down anything that I think will do performance, it will improve performance. The reason why I actually studied hypnosis is because I'd gone to a stage show one night seen a guy being hypnotized and told, when you hear this piece of music, you'll think you're Rocky Balboa. Eye of the Tiger came on, guy starts shadow boxing, we're all laughing. Then he got down, he started doing one-arm press-ups. Then he started switching from one arm to the other and back. And I went, oh my God, if I learn this stuff and I do this with my athletes, can I make them believe that they are the Rocky Balboas? And the answer to that is, yes, you can. But they must have to have the ability first. In other words, I can hypnotize my granny. I can convince her she's Rocky Balboa. But if I put her in against Mike Tyson, there's still a good chance she's going to lose. So you need to have the ability. But the visual, how you visualize it, is also really important. And then the third part is the sound, what you hear. And it's that inner coach, so the inner voice. So if we look at all three, so minute number one should be focused on changing your body. And so if your heart rate's increasing and your breathing rate's becoming rapid, you can't control the heart rate, but you can certainly control your breathing.
Mm.
So what I do with all my clients, whether they're in business or in sport, is you teach them how to breathe properly. And there are two ways of breathing. To get what you want. The first way is, if you're overhyped, how you relax, and that's the slow breathing, the deep breathing all the way down, pulling, you know, right the way down into the lungs, and that slow breathing. But then you might want to get psyched up. So you might feel flat going into something. So you might want more energy. Well, if you see a weightlifter getting onto the stage to lift weights in a competition, they don't breathe deeply and slowly before they don't. They breathe faster. Boosts the adrenaline through the system. So how you breathe actually has a big impact. Also, your body has a huge impact. People talk about affirmations all the time. You use positive affirmations. Stand in front of a mirror and you say, I am great. I am wonderful. I feel brilliant. It's useless. And the reason why it's useless is because you're standing there and you're saying this and your brain's going, no, you're not. No, you don't. And you're feeding the information to the brain from your body. So if you're standing in looking in a mirror and your head is down and your shoulders are down and you're going, I feel great, your brain's going, no, you don't. So the first place to start is with the body. So when I start with our world champion, it's body up. This is what I said to him, body up, body up. Body up means, there you go. You've done it straight away. As soon as somebody mentions it, body up, people go, yeah, shoulders are up, shoulders are back. There you go, the head is up. Yeah, body up. So we create the swagger of a champion. When the champion walks into a room, you know who that champion is. Before anybody will even tell you who they are, you know who they are. They own the room. And so that's why the body is so important. So this body up. Minute one, breathe body up. Minute two, visualize how you see it going. Visualize what you want to happen. Not necessarily the result. So in other words, he's not seeing the fighter go down. So he's not seeing the end of the fight. What he's seeing in his mind is, imagine yourself stepping forward, moving from left to right. I can see the opponent is in black and white. Now the dots start to appear. Those red dots are targets. And then launch the missiles. I can see myself now stepping forward. I can see myself throwing that left hook. See myself throwing the left hook. I can feel it. So we create this visualization. But that's the same thing going into a meeting. So what you do with the visualization is you don't see just them shaking your hand at the end going, well done, you have the investment. You see yourself, imagine going into it and I'm calm and relaxed. Imagine being able to answer all the questions that's been asked of me. Imagine being able to take, when a question comes to me, I take that breath for a moment and then I'm able to flow, and you visualize that. And the third minute then is this inner coach. And this is really important for anybody. If you're an entrepreneur out there, you must train your inner coach to have this positive self-talk. Okay. And the easiest way to do it in a sports perspective, something that I do with my athletes all the time. So I work with riders who, for example, will write things like the Giro d'Italia, the Tour de France, you know, World Tour riders. And they have the same fears and doubts as other people. But I always talk to those guys about, right, so you're going to be on the TV. So Eurosport, let's say Eurosport are showing you and you're in your breakaway and you're up the road, right? And you're riding and riding and riding up the road and everything is great. Imagine what would happen if Eurosport was able to put the commentary of what you're actually saying to yourself at that moment. So it actually played what your self-talk is saying to you at that moment as you're in the break. Would you want everybody who's watching Eurosport to be able to hear what your inner coach, your inner voice is saying to you. In other words, is it saying, oh man, I'm so weak. Oh God, I'll never be able to get to the top of this mountain. I hate mountains. I can never climb mountains. Or is your inner voice saying, this is going to be tough, but I'm up for the challenge. Just get to the signpost. Just get to that gateway. This inner coach, and that's why for me, the 3 minutes is so important for people who are, if you're going into an investment, if you're going into a meeting, whatever it is, that 3 minutes before you go in, minute one, body up, breathe. Minute two, visualize yourself doing it. Minute three, use the self-talk. And the self-talk, I'm not talking about self-talk here in terms of just being positive. If I have a cyclist that says, I am the greatest cyclist in the world, I am the best cyclist ever, the brain is going, no, you're not, because you're not. You can't lie. You don't lie to your brain. If you say, I'm the best entrepreneur in the world, I'm the best business person ever, no, you're not. I'm sure there are people out there who are better than you. You don't say that. Instead, with a cyclist, he says, I stay calm, I can stay focused. You know, I can push up the road, I can drive, I can go for this. When an entrepreneur going into a meeting, instead of thinking to yourself, I'm the best business person, you know, you say, I can speak clearly. You know, I know what I'm talking about. I'm ready. I planned this out. I know what I'm doing. I have the knowledge.
That's great.
This is my time. This is my moment. And no one takes this away from me. And that, all true statements. And so that's why, for me, when you have that boxer who's standing in the dressing room about to walk out, and it is the most amazing thing in the world, man, I got to tell you, man, when you're standing in the dressing room with a world champion and the door opens and the guy says, right, you're ready to go, and you're walking through the crowd and the noise. And then when you get into the ring with them, and so you're in the ring, and again, at that moment, they're ready. So a question that sometimes we ask, it starts off with, who's the champ? I'm the champ. Who's the champ? I'm the champ. And it just keeps getting louder and louder in the dressing room. Anyway.
I love it. Well, who's the champ?
I'm the champ.
Yeah, you're the champ, Alan. Well, listen, I'm buzzing. My body's up. I'm breathing nice and slow. I'm visualizing how this podcast is going to wrap up, because we've got to wrap it up in a minute. So it's going to be getting towards the end of our time.
We could spend hours talking on different things, Dan. This is my favorite thing.
I've got like 1,000 things, and just this is just so full of rich information for me. A, from a work point of view, B, from a training for my thing point of view. So thank you so much for being so open and sharing. And I think there's so much rich advice in there that's very, very directly transferable. And I for one, I'm going to like really digest a lot of this. Brilliant stuff. And where can people find you on the internet, Alan? Where can people find you, or in real life?
Well, it's alanheary.com, H-E-A-R-Y .com. So it's just alanheary.com, or obviously through LinkedIn, just LinkedIn, Alan Heary.
Great.
All the usual channels, Dan, all the usual channels.
He's on Twitter, Instagram, website, all sorts. But he's also, by the way, got some very good online courses, including one called Going in the Zone, which is specifically for business people. So please check that out, because I think it's really working on that mental, the way you think, the way you're approaching stuff, as we've gone through today, scoping out that will really help you day to day in your work.
Yeah, I think, sorry, Dan, just on that last little thing, I think one of the things that people miss out on is when you start your own business, right? So you do your own business course. And what happens is you go on a course and they teach you how to do the 3 P's, product, price, promotion, and they teach you about finances. But nobody teaches you how to walk into a room feeling that you belong there, feeling confident. No one tells you how to stay focused on a daily basis. No one tells you. That's where the likes of this comes in. For me, it's all about training, and it is training. So anyone can train themselves to be better. That's my point. But anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. I really appreciate you asking me on.
Well, and a real pleasure to see you, because Alan is a total legend. I'll maybe one day go and race around Ireland, but I need to, psych myself up, put myself in the zone, and give myself some positive talk, perhaps.
We're actually doing a virtual one at the moment. So we're doing a virtual race around Ireland, so you can ride it from anywhere in the world. And you,
there you go.
Every time you go out and you ride your bike. It just adds up your distance. There
well,
you go.
I shall maybe get on it this afternoon then. There we go. But please check him out on alanheary.com. And I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box, just enter it in and we will send you that information, and it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google, Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening. I'll see you next time.